We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day? Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined as always by Darius and Mike. Thank you for joining us on this special weekend episode of the LFR Pod. We wanted to wait until after the Clippers game and then after the Portland game. And we find ourselves at the end of this in the seventh seed. And we're going to talk about that more, like the ramifications of the play-in tournament, you know, the mechanics of it, how it works, because I think there's some confusion about that. But today, I really want to talk about the game against Portland and really get into it, because I've been waiting all season long for us to kind of get more into the present tense. And this felt like a step toward that. And maybe that's just my hopes, right? That on Sunday against Phoenix, it's not going to look like the way that it did against the Clippers. But what I saw, Darius, in this game was a team that was at a bad deficit in an important aspect of the game, where without LeBron James, without Dennis Schroeder, and also without Talen Horton-Tucker. And what that means is that we don't have many guys who can dribble. So like the first possession of the second quarter is Kyle Kuzma bringing the ball up against full court pressure and handing the ball off to Wes Matthews. I think the fourth started with Point Keefe, right? Point Mark Keith Morris. The point being that there are guys being put in positions that they're just not used to being put in. And so in a key aspect of this game, we were at a big talent disadvantage, which was true in the Clippers game as well. But the difference was is that we competed in this game. And Anthony Davis had his best game back. Really one of his best games of the season, in ways that I was very encouraged by beyond just the numbers. So let's start there, man. I'd love to hear your in this environment where we don't have guys able to make post-entry passes and do a lot of the ball handling things that make a normal NBA offense look like one. Anthony Davis was still able to dominate.
I thought this was the natural successor to the game against the Nuggets. The Clippers game was in between that, right? But AD played one shift in the first quarter. He had some defensive miscues in that Clippers game. Mm-hmm. And you could tell that the Clippers defensive game plan against him individually and against a team was really going to make his life hard. And I didn't think that was going to be really a great example for him of really another building block game. This game, I thought, was more representative of that for him. And I really liked a lot of the nuance that he brought offensively. Because of where I live, I did not get the Spectrum feed, so I got the ESPN feed, right? And that's a different feed, and they're highlighting different things, right? And so there was a particular segment where Doris Burke was just sort of breaking down what AD was doing. And he had a really, he had a couple of really good possessions where I thought he just showed why he's one of the best players in the world. Like, got into his dribble, came off a pick and roll, right? Like a 4 or 5 pick and roll too. And gets downhill some, leans into Covington to sort of like get him off of him, and then elevates and shoots a little fading 15-foot jumper going left. And it's just like, that's the dude who I recognize. And in the fourth quarter, especially, just the level of effort that he was showing on both ends of the floor. I thought defensively he was monstrous in that fourth quarter. It didn't mean that he was perfect, but I just thought his activity level was so high that he was able to make a lot of plays that he just has not been making.
This is a case where the small picture of being the game tonight and the big picture kind of have the same general point, in that AD looking like himself was why the Lakers were in this game, despite all of the places that they had to make up that they just didn't have the roster for, as Pete alluded to, with the complete lack of playmaking. And that is what is going to have to happen for the Lakers to get where they want to get in the postseason, along with, of course, LeBron returning and Schroeder returning with his health. So it's kind of like there's a couple boxes the Lakers have to check. And the one that we have to see right now is that AD is getting close to being AD. And so on top of the Denver performance, having this one where he plays 39 minutes, he scores 36 points, he's got 12 rebounds, he's got 5 assists. I thought he had more than one block. That's what he got credited with. But like the plays Darius was just referring to, one of them was when he packed Nurkic. The other one was when he disrupted Covington. And I think that one didn't get ruled as a block. I don't know if it slipped out of his hands or whatever happened on that one. But that's the AD that, especially in crunch time, gives the other team nightmares when, well, how are you supposed to score? Because he can take the rim away completely, almost by himself, in rotation, whatever, and then he can go give it to you on the other end. So that's super encouraging. And Pete, let me kind of kick it back to you for some AD-specific thoughts on this game tonight and like kind of what you saw that's encouraging, because I don't think you can take a discouraging point away from this game for AD.
Certainly not, but this was especially encouraging to me because he dominated around the basket. He persevered through hardship. I thought that he used his physical advantages to dominate a smaller player. So much of this year, he's been settling for jump shots and just not really physically dominating the guy across from him.
How many times have you seen AD this year, Pete, really say, "F it, I'm going to the backboards"?
That's
and
right.
You're not stopping me
That's
from
right.
making an impact on the glass. I thought that was the encouraging thing for me against the Nuggets is that he was getting contested rebounds and not mm-hmm. just uncontested ones.
That's
and
right.
I thought this game he did even more of that.
That's absolutely the case. And that goes to my wanting to focus on today. This is, of course, what we need to succeed in the postseason. But under the current circumstances where you're playing a game, you're trying to beat the Portland Trailblazers, you have no ball handlers, how do you give your team a chance to win this game? We didn't win it, but we had a chance to win this game in ways that we didn't have against the Clippers, and that we didn't bring the necessary effort. Like, this is why we lost games to the Kings and why we gave up 72 points and a half to the Raptors. There was a certain level of engagement and I'm going to dominate around the basket that AD showed. But also within that, he got tapped on a bunch of shots, man. He had a bunch of little floaters and jump hooks that he back rimmed that are usually that shot. Like, he had beaten Covington or whomever was defending him on that play, and usually that's his shot. He had that one play where he should have gotten fouled. But the whistle we got tonight, man, that's a whole nother topic. But I rarely ever complain about the refs. This was an awfully officiated game.
It's bad. Now, just fourth quarter alone, the three plays that were just killing me. And I think I heard James. So I got switched over to the post game Zooms. Apparently James Worthy was going in on the refs after. So Pete, maybe you could summarize that. But the play, so the Caruso goaltending play, the AD play where he tried to dunk it and then Nurkic clearly smashed into him on the way up. No call, no bucket. And then the final play late. What was the third play at the rim?
Kuz's put back dunk.
Yeah, the biggest play, right? The Kuz tipping. And so all of those plays, right? Just those alone, it's probably a different result, right? So just those plays alone. And Portland took advantage. Lillard canned a couple of threes off of that. But I think that's where the players had more of a frustrated tone and kind of a disappointed tone after, because they all said they felt like they played well enough to win. They battled despite being shorthanded on a back-to-back. They withstood some of Dame's night, and that was a tough one to take for them.
So this is one of those things where I believe in the basketball gods, right? And that comes from, and I know this sounds like a romantic, silly notion, but in my experience watching basketball, coaching basketball on a very low level, you get rewarded for playing a certain way. Certain things happen to you. You luck into a better whistle. You luck into a better bounce. If you respect the game, if you stay focused and really working on what you do, you will get rewarded for those types of things. But it doesn't happen overnight. We have not brought the requisite presence in the moment enough this season to where now that we're deciding, hey, tonight we don't care that we're down all of these ball handlers. Yeah. We're going to try to win this game. We're going to do whatever we can with the roster that we have. That includes some rotation changes too, right?
Yeah.
That's a coaching thing as well. But we're going to do everything that we can to win this game tonight. Well, just saying that, hey, we're going to do that, you got to kind of get yourself out of the mud, right, to be able to do that. And you don't always get rewarded. And that's where I was going with the AD thing. Those shots, if he keeps playing the way that he did against Portland tonight, he's going to make those shots that he got tapped on. That dunk, like even that play against Nurkic, that dunk went halfway down before it popped back out. There were several very strange plays in this that, to me, I was laughing in my whole ethos and way of conceptualizing the game. I'm like, yeah, that's your toll to the basketball gods for not bringing it for so much of the season. And he fought through that, man. He fought through. There was a point we went down by 10 in that fourth quarter. Dame hit a three, then CJ hit a three, took it from 4-10.
That was about 3 minutes left. And I said, that feels like the dagger. And then they got it back. Man,
bro, and AD got it back, man. Yep. AD went on a bonkers run and he almost brought us all the way back. And that's the type of thing where you saw him being frustrated with himself, the free throws, he's missing the free throws, all of this, right? But he fought through the frustration. And to me, this was a really important building block game going forward because those things matter.
I hope they see it that way too.
I hope they're not too discouraged.
Yeah, Mike. There's a certain defiance that I look for in a team that is good, that is sort of down on its luck a little bit, right? Because it's very easy, that sort of woe is me. The Lakers are basically, you're going to compare them to a football team. They're like a team that is out there trying to run the Wildcat offense for real. Like, not as like a gimmick. Like, we actually don't have a quarterback, so we're going to run the Wildcat the entire game, and we're going to try to grind you down in order to win. There's a certain amount of resiliency and commitment to that idea that you need to have and sort of buying in, which I think what Pete was speaking to before. But when you start to suffer the types of injuries and losses that the Lakers have, I think it's easy to get down on yourself. I think it's easy to feel discouraged. I think it's easy to sort of say, you know what? Maybe it's not our year. We won last year. That was great. This year, everything keeps going bad. Kuz sort of spoke to this in the post game after, I think, the Clippers game, right? Where he was talking about like the bad juju. And there's like some of that is tongue in cheek, but I think it's reflective of what I'm talking about, that it's sort of easy to get down on yourself. So post game, Mike, what's the feeling that you're getting from the players when you're listening to them reflect on games like this?
players are almost always going to be more confident than fans watching the players. It's, there's a reason why these guys have gotten this far in their lives. And for the most part, they, these guys have all had success since they were kids. And it gets, you can get on a team where a losing team, right? A young team, usually some malaise can build with the wrong culture, and that can happen. But more often than not, you know, these guys are all going to have a source of confidence. And I think there's a big difference between the Lakers and the Blazers, and even in this game tonight. And the Blazers just, they're not going to get into you. Like, they are bad defensively, and they're 29th in the NBA. They came out and actually pressured the ball. I think the game plan was sound. Stotts watched the game last night, or I guess this is now two nights ago, depending on when you're listening to this, against the Clippers. And they're like, oh, the Lakers, we should be up on them. And Pete, I think you texted this to our group thread, right? Like, they were up. They were pressing, and the Lakers were turning the ball all over the place. And then the Blazers were like, okay, we're good. And Damon CJ just let Caruso drive by whenever he wanted to. They let KCP cut wherever he wanted to. They let AD catch the ball, which they never should have done. They should have been trapping him and fronting him and denying him, because he's just going to cook Covington just like he did in the playoffs last year. So I don't think Portland's what they go back to is trying to stay close enough in games where Dame and CJ can hit shots late. Like, that's their plan. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work against good teams. And the Lakers, even tonight, as shorthanded as they were, and you almost literally cannot be more shorthanded than having your three, or at least three of your top four playmakers out. And just LeBron and Schroeder out is a huge, huge loss. It just is. And the Lakers say, well, you know what? We can still defend. That's what AD said after the Clipper game. That's what Frank Vogel said. So that's their DNA. That's what they do. And that's why that confidence, I think, is still there. And where it's more, instead of being, you know, pissed that whatever the seeding thing is, and, you know, how this increases Portland's chance of having a higher seed than the Lakers, and the Lakers being in the play-in, they're just more pissed that, like, they know that they feel like they have that defensive club in their bag is better than Portland even at full strength. And so it's an annoyance, Darius. It's not so much like, woe is me. And that's what you need, Pete. Like, that's what they have to get back to.
That's speaking to the point I was really trying to get at, is that there is an arrogance and a, like, we want to keep going, rather than sort of wallowing in your lot in life, right?
Your misfortune.
And it's important to me that this team understands that they can still find their way, right?
And they know that, yeah.
And their ceiling may not be as high with a not 100% LeBron and a group that has not had enough time together, right? And at some point, if they get far enough in the playoffs, that may show up for them. But there is a certain amount of belief that I want them to have. And this game was encouraging on that note, because AD sort of led them there. After the Denver game, I wrote this piece at Forum Blue and Gold called Proof of Life. And it was my ode to sort of AD with the, like, we back. And and that idea of he's saying that to KCP, like, in the moment, like, we just got a good win, right? But a part of me feels like AD saying that to himself. And this game, I thought, was a great example of him sort of pushing it one more step forward. But there's more steps to go.
That's why the way that this went, even with the loss, the pushing through that 10-point deficit, even early on, it was like a 14-point game. I was thinking, with the ball handling issues, I'm like, this is going to be a 25-point game in the third quarter, and that's going to be that. And there are different points where you can make those choices throughout a game, where teams absolutely make those choices of, are we going to push back, or are we going to try to roll over until the next time? And what you were saying about belief, my biggest concern about the team lately has been hearing more and more of those quotes like, man, it's just one thing after another.
Yeah.
Which is totally true. It totally has been, right? Like, there's a lot of things out of your control. So it's not wrong, and they're not wrong to get discouraged, but it is something that you got to push through.
Well, so this, to get back to and try to keep this to the centralized point for me to take out of this game, and all relating back to Anthony Davis, what these guys and what the teammates of Anthony Davis need to see is what they saw tonight. They need to see him dominating again. that's going to breed confidence for everyone else. And when LeBron comes back, that's the final piece. If the Lakers see LeBron come on the court and be LeBron, then that's it. Then confidence restored, order restored. And it's not that they can't get there if LeBron isn't that complete thing, but like that is still very possible. And that's why we have to be so careful not to push this aside and to freak out about a play-in game. Like if LeBron's healthy, I'm not gonna do the whole thing. Oh man, the Lakers better be careful. What if the Warriors come in with Steph Curry? No, if LeBron's healthy, then whoever the opponent coming into Staples Center that night should be scared. Like, and that's the attitude they have to have.
Speaking of LeBron and him coming back, I think he needs to see AD like this as much as like we talk about. Oh, the rest of AD's teammates. Well, guess who is one of AD's teammates? LeBron James. To me, it was not necessarily a coincidence that LeBron was not pushing through at the same level when he saw in those two games that he came back that AD was not pushing through right there with him. Right. I'm not going to try to like speak for LeBron or even speculate where his head would be around that stuff. It's just that LeBron knows as much as he's going to say, if I'm not myself, if I'm not 100%, our chances go way down. He also knows if AD is not right there standing shoulder to shoulder with him playing at that same level, the Lakers' chances also go way, way, way down. And so performances like this are important for everyone. They're important for AD. They're important for all of the non-LeBron teammates, but I think they're also important for LeBron.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially in a postseason where it's likely that LeBron is not going to be at his physical best. Yeah. So he may need somebody to pick up the slack, not just overall, but in terms of physical dominance. If you have one of your superstars able to be physically dominant, the other one can maybe absorb some of those decision-making responsibilities while not carrying as big of a load in that respect. And only Anthony Davis can do that. So LeBron and the rest of us being able to see that from AD was very encouraging. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, there were some more changes tonight from the coaching perspective and a lineup perspective that signaled that this is us turning it back into the present tense. Credit Karma has always been there to help you make better financial decisions. And now they want to help even more. With a Credit Karma Money Spend account, you can be rewarded for good money habits. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. When you use your Credit Karma Money debit card, you can win daily Instant Karma purchase reimbursements on items up to $5,000. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot, and your Instant Karma cash will be added back to your spend account. Credit Karma Money has already given away over $3 million in Instant Karma to 50,000 Credit Karma members and counting. Open your FDIC-insured spend account for free. There's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. And when you make a purchase between June 8th and June 30th, you'll be automatically entered to win $1 million. Credit Karma Money. Progress starts here. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning instant karma. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant Karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank Incorporated, member FDIC. Maximum balance and transfer limits apply. So I would argue that this is the first game that Marc Gasol played in on purpose in quite some time. Maybe the Denver game, maybe he was supposed to be in the rotation in that, but what actually happened was Andre Drummond picked up his third foul, and Marc came in for the last 2 minutes or so of the second quarter, which is not a normal shift, right?
Trez had already gotten burned.
That's right.
In that Denver game. And he had already played his normal shift. Drummond comes back in to play his normal shift to close out the half, picks up a foul, and rather than going back to Trez,
that's right,
he went to Marc.
He goes to Marc. So he's not in the normal rotation at that point. Usually if you don't get a normal rotation run in the first half, you're not slated for one in the second half. There was another game where Trez was predetermined to sit before the game in kind of the spirit of we're going to give everybody run type of thing. But that was like announced before the game. That wasn't the case tonight. This was a game where Marc Gasol came in as the backup center. Trez did not play. And the responsible adults lineup that I've been talking about, him and Wes came in and I thought really helped stabilize things, especially in that late first and into the second quarter, kind of got that game under control. But Mike, this was the first time, like I said, that I think in a while where Marc came in as the backup on purpose. And I thought that was a significant event.
Yeah, Frank Vogel had hinted at this and it played out in the way that he had hinted. Now, I don't know at what point that he decided this. Was it after a certain game in which Gasol was clearly the better option, especially against bigger players, or was it always part of the plan? I don't know. But the bottom line is I wasn't totally surprised by this because of what Frank had been saying for the last week and change. And his basic point was that against teams that have two bigs, like two classic bigs that have basically a backup center like Enes Kanter, then Marc Gasol is going to play. Or a team that has a player like Jokic who's going to play 35 to 40 minutes, in which case you need two bigs on him. And you don't want one of those guys to be Trez. And I think to summarize this, Darius, as we move forward, anytime the Lakers are in a matchup like, say, Sunday, when Dario Saric is the backup center, I think you're going to see Trez on Sunday. I think he's going to give Trez a chance to try to bully Saric, to try to go through him, to try to score at the rim. But if Marc could play also on DeAndre Ayton, if Ayton plays big minutes and Drummond gets in foul trouble and whatever happens, so it's not necessarily that he's going to get a DNP. But if a team doesn't go small at all, like Portland did tonight, then you're probably not going to see Trez unless something different happens. And I think it's a good adjustment. I think it's appropriate. I think it's key for what a playoff matchup is. And just like we saw last season, guys, when it came down to it, there was going to be a series where, sorry, JaVale, this isn't your series. Sorry, Dwight, this isn't your series. Sorry, Keith, this isn't your series. And AD, you're going to be playing. But that's I think, where they've gotten to, and I think that's progress.
I do think it's progress.
Not perfect, progress.
No, that's right. I'm still skeptical to a certain extent. Only from the standpoint of the Lakers really need Marc right now for offensive purposes as
That's
well.
Right. Yeah.
And there is like a need there that I think supersedes what Trez brings offensively. That is also a strength, I think, that Vogel does value, right? Which is his scoring and his interior presence. But without a playmaker out there to help Trez, he's not a let's throw you the ball in the post 25 times and you go get us points. He needs a pick and roll partner. He needs someone who's going to drive and dish to him. He needs someone who's going to break down the defense and get up shots on the backboard, and then Trez can clean up via offensive rebounds. That player does not exist right now on the Lakers roster healthy enough to actually get burned. So what the Lakers need then is an organizer. They need someone who can move the ball around, who they can run offense through, who can help generate shots for other players. And that's Marc Gasol. And so my concern in this, Pete, isn't that I don't doubt that Marc, that the choice was made, right? And it wasn't by happenstance. It wasn't because of some fluky thing that happened with fouls or something like that. Where I start to have a little bit of pause is I wonder when LeBron James is back, when Dennis Schroeder's back, is Vogel still going to look at Marc Gasol as the option here, or is he going to go back to the lineups that he's been favoring when those guys were available to play?
So I want to try to stipulate something out of what you just said, Darius, and throw it at Pete. If the Lakers had to win tonight's game, given the personnel that they had, and it was otherwise your season is over, I think the lineup that would have made more sense would have been Mark to start. Like, you need the playmaking right there from the beginning because you don't have it with the guards. And that's the way that I would have gone. I don't know if Vogel agrees or not, but I think they are expecting to get LeBron back soon. They are expecting to get Schroeder at some point. And so, you know, do you then disrupt the whole Drummond thing, like put Drummond on the bench? Because you've already done that with Trez. You've already kind of increased Mark's role some. And I think that was probably a bridge too far for Frank to go and make that adjustment. Again, this is like they didn't have to win this game. I get that it has implications for the 7 seed, Pete, but like that to me, there is still at least enough of a difference there that's where Frank was going in for the Portland game.
Yeah, and to be fair, I'm not talking about Mark should have started this game. It's more just if everyone was actually available, still considering the matchups, right? It's still Cantor, it's still Nurkic, it's still all of that. Would he have still pivoted to Mark here and looked at him as the most viable option? And I'm not sure with that.
Oh, I think you're fair to be uncertain about that. I'm not sure that he would have either. I think the Lakers have tried to enact a plan that has somewhat backfired. Remember when we signed Drummond? I was like, without LeBron, all of the things that will piss you off about Drummond will be accentuated. And pretty much the whole time about with Drummond has been without LeBron. And the two games that we had, AD was in a funk. LeBron certainly wasn't moving well. So the theory, I believe, behind the starting lineup and the insistence that we're trying to start Andre Drummond is to get the athletes out in transition, to play at a very fast pace. And I do think that's a team-wide idea. And since we have not had LeBron, a lot of the things that are bad about him, it's not just that, like, there are certain fit elements, right, where he's not a shooter, so he's not a floor spacer. He's going to be a dunker spot guy by and large. Next to another big without a guard and without a ball handler at this period of time, now that AD's kind of starting to click back into the player that we know he can be, there's still not that guard to help make it make sense. And all of that is, or a great deal of that are external factors, right? The idea was we're going to get them enough minutes before the end of the regular season for this to be cohesive enough that by the time the postseason runs around, we'll be able to do this. But the second injury to LeBron in particular, I think has thrown a wrench in this, where I am on your side of thinking, Darius, in that Mark should be the 25 to 30 minute per game guy. And then in most circumstances, I think Drummond is the other guy and filling the rest of those minutes. Sometimes Trez. And there will be some games where Mark's an 18-minute guy, right? But the point is that Mark is the guy that you build your rotation around. Although I believe that's off of the bench because I think that he's more useful with that second unit. I also think that when LeBron comes back, Mark and LeBron had a great net rating to start the season. They play really well off of each other. And so those two going up against second units to start second and fourth quarters, like I think they could just dominate those units as well. Anyway, like I get what they were going for with Drummond. And I do still think that it would work given enough runway and enough time. But the fact is that we do have some cohesion built up with Mark. And in a season that's had so little of it, so many guys going in and out, having a guy who is not just somebody that you have a history with and minutes with, but Mark knows how to play.
Yes.
In a way that just makes things flow and organize in a way where, like, I was watching that first shift with Drummond and AD, and everybody without a guard there, they were playing like they just met at the Y. And this is not a criticism on any individual player. They're just, it was disorganized basketball. They're figuring out how to play with each other. And so I'm more and more to the, like, if Mark is not a significant part of what we're doing, I think that's a huge mistake because we've had so little in the way of cohesion and consistency throughout the year.
let's just deal with what the reality is, though, and actually and just observe with what Vogel's done. And take the last 2 weeks. He played 21 minutes against Boston, 18 against Dallas, 17 against Denver, 23 against Portland. He barely played against the Clippers, 6 minutes, the Kings, 8 minutes, and the Knicks, 5 minutes. Those are all small second units that he didn't play against. The big second units or the ones that have a player like Jokic, he played more. And I think that's going to be the general thing that Frank's going to do so that he can, that's the way to sell it in the locker room to Trez. Hey, look, I hate sitting you, but this is why Marc Gasol is better against this type of player. And the same thing, Drummond is what it is right now with the starting lineup, but sometimes Drummond's going to play 20 minutes. Sometimes he's going to play 25. I think it's rare that you're going to see him play much more than that. But the allowance that I think we've seen from Vogel is that in the right matchup, when Gasol is playing well, and by the way, Gasol doesn't like switching out on the perimeter. He doesn't like playing against bigs that shoot threes, and then he has to track back. Like he prefers to play against a big that's going to be down low. That's what he's done his whole career. That's what he's most effective at. So in those type of series, I think we're going to see a lot more Mark. And in the type of series where that guy isn't there as much, we're going to see less Mark. And I just think that's the way that it's going to be.
I'm hopeful. So I think I fall more on the side of he needs to play.
Where I am too.
Just in general, he needs to play. And I think that he's too smart a player. I think both offensively and defensively, I think his feel for the game is just too good. I think I just have a soft spot for guys who like go out there and just know what the hell they're doing, regardless of situation or scenario, because they just got it. When Mark called himself the Wolf the other night, that quote reminded me of sort of the way that Phil Jackson used to treat Luke Walton. Phil used to call on Luke when the offense really started to gum up because Luke was sort of the triangle whisperer for those Lakers teams, right? He wasn't the most talented player and he was never as good a player as Marc Gasol. But the idea of this dude knows how to play, he knows what he's doing, and he's never going to get in anyone else's way. He's only going to help facilitate the things that help other people succeed, right? And is it always going to work? No, it's not always going to work. Does he have his own flaws? Yes, he has his own flaws. But I'm just of the mind that however we get there, Mike, whether it's because there's a big guy that he needs to match up with, or even if it's just because the Lakers need more floor spacing, I don't care what idea it is that we grasp onto that makes it so that Mark ends up being a regular rotation player. I just want him there. And so, however,
we all do. We're not talking about what we want, though. Like we've there's evidence now. Like we've seen what it is.
Yes.
See, I don't necessarily agree with that because I think that we've been – I think there are locker room dynamics as well. I don't think that it's a coincidence that Wes and Mark were the dudes that went to the bench, because you could put Wes and Mark on the bench, and if you're saying, hey, we're trying to keep 12, 13 guys, because exactly what you're saying, Mike, that Vogel looks at his role players appropriately so as being appropriate for different series. And in order to do that, you got to keep your whole squad sharp. Sitting Mark and Wes, they're pros, right? Both guys know exactly the job that they're doing, and they can sit for 2 weeks. You can plug them in at the end of the third quarter of a game that they didn't expect to play in, and they will come in and they will know exactly what they're doing right away. And they may not love it, but they're going to be pros, and they're going to be ready when you call upon them. I think that's part of the reason why they're the guys that got put to the side.
Yeah, that was the last pod about Mark.
Right. Yeah. So what I'm saying in context with, I don't necessarily think we have seen the way that Vogel will be operating his rotation. Now, one game isn't enough evidence to say, oh, Mark's in the rotation now. But I don't think I think Vogel's been trying to serve different goals up until this point that, considering our circumstances in the standings and the fact that just the playoffs coming up in five games, play-in game or not, that the priorities are starting to change.
Yeah, yes. But I'm just saying that like Frank has also just told us explicitly and then put it into action. Drum's going to start. Gasol's going to come off the bench now against the bigger guys. Harrell's going to come off against the smaller guys. If The second that Harrell or Drummond struggles, though, it does seem like he's increasingly going back to Mark. And part of that is because Mark has been playing better and he's been shooting better. But again, all three of us have advocated for Gasol all year. It's not like the last thing I want to do is try to come across like I'm not on the Mark should play more side of this. I'm just trying to say like it's been pretty obvious what's going on. And I think it will continue to be so.
But the constant in that scenario is Drummond, where it's like Drummond's going to play. And then depending on what happens with the second unit of the other team, it'll be Marker or Trez. What I'm saying is that whether it's starting or not, the way that Drummond is held, that's how Gasol should be. And it should be we should either go Drummond or Trez against this team, depending on what they're doing. Because Mark is the one bit of solid ground.
Yeah, I hear that, but I don't. But what indication is there been any indication that that's going to happen? That he's just going to say, you know what, Drummond, you go to the bench. So that's all I'm saying. We're speaking in, and this is sort of like the idealistic fantasy world of it. Drummond's clearly the starter. If in a certain series, if Drummond's really struggling, then could he go to Mark and say, okay, you're starting now. Sorry, Andre. Absolutely. Right. Like, and as well he should. But we're not going to start like that. And I think it's going to take some doing to get to that point.
I think you're absolutely right in that. But what I'm saying is that I think Drummond's going to start no matter what. But there's a difference between being a 20 to 25 minute guy, like you were saying, and being like a JaVale type of starter, right? Yeah, like if Drummond isn't appropriate for a series, like, yo, you get 6 minutes at the beginning of the first and third, and then we're going to go with, you know what I'm saying? So that's the difference.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Yep.
Are you going to be a four shift player, or potentially are you going to be a two or a one shift player? And there is a stature that you carry based off of that. And who is being prioritized, right? And just because you're a starter does not mean that you are being prioritized. The Lakers showed that last season, and they showed it specifically with JaVale McGee. And I think, Pete, I don't want to speak for you, but I think you and I are sort of saying Mark should be prioritized in that same way as someone who this guy should be the constant, even if he's not the starter.
So I'm going to try to summarize, because I think we all agree after all that. So Drummond's going to start. We all kind of acknowledge that. But what Frank Vogel has been kind of leaning towards in these last couple of games is that Mark is the quicker call off the bench in certain situations, at least than what was happening a couple of weeks ago. And Trez is more like the you can go against small second units and give us a lift and give us a boost. But if we're struggling on defense, it may be Gasol that we turn back to as opposed to Drummond, especially in second halves. And like as well, it should be. Does that work?
Yes. I also think, too, that as the Lakers hopefully keep playing and keep playing well, AD's role within this as a center, which he was basically closing the game as against the Trailblazers, is going to be even more important. And Pete, we're not going to get to that now, but I definitely want to get more into that in future pods, because as AD starts to resemble himself more and more, sort of deploying him in the ways that make the most sense for the Lakers to be closer to their peak is another decision I think Vogel is going to have to go to.
It's funny. This is the lowest we've been in the standings. And the combination of that with how the game went tonight is a really weird mix, because this is the most optimistic and excited I've felt in a little bit. So that said, I think it's looking more and more likely we're going to be in the play-in game. So there's going to be a lot to talk about. We'll talk more about the play-in game, the mechanics of it, our likelihood of being in it, just what's coming up with all of that. But I hope you enjoyed this weekend episode of the LFR Pod. We'll be back to start next week. But until then, you can listen to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double-teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's in. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Gamble in and out. The ball is tipped, and it's saved. 3 seconds left. Here's Van Exel. This is for the win. He got it.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds, an amazing performance by Kobe. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
La- lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me? I know Red Auerbach is rolling over.
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
How strong was that? A triple and a fallaway in the corner with a shot clock down. Lakers by three.
Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
And the critical part was Pietrus jogging back. Didn't bounce the floor. It's a two-for-one situation.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant, yes, and that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Bad insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?